House will come to order. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Here.
Barlow.
Here.
Berger.
Here.
Blake.
Here.
Blevins.
Here.
Blickery.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Burkhart.
Here.
Bird.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Coleman.
Here.
Connolly.
Here.
Davison.
Here.
Eklund.
Here.
Esquivel.
Here.
Filer.
Here.
Freeman.
Here.
Gay.
Here.
Gingery.
Here.
Goggles.
Here.
Greer,
here.
Green,
here.
Halverson,
here.
Harshman,
here.
Harvey,
here.
Hunt,
here.
Hutchings,
here.
Yagi,
here.
Kasparik,
here.
Kirkbride,
here.
Croker,
here.
Crone,
here.
Larson,
here.
Lockhart,
here.
Laux,
here.
Madden,
here.
McKim,
here.
Miller,
here.
Moniz,
here.
Nicholas, Nicholas, Northrup,
here.
Patton,
here.
Paxton,
here.
Petroff,
here.
Pieperinen,
here.
Reeder,
here.
Semlick,
here.
Summers,
here.
Stubson,
here.
Teeters,
here.
Throne,
here.
Wallace,
here.
Walters,
here.
Watt, Watt excused, Wilson,
here.
Winters,
here.
Zwanitzer Dan,
here.
Zwanitzer Dave,
here.
Mr. Speaker,
here.
Nicholas,
excused.
Nicholas excused. 58 present, 2 excused.
Our prayer today is offered by Rabbi Harley Kartz Wagman from the Mount Sinai Synagogue in Cheyenne.
I am honored to have this opportunity and pass on to you a concern that a colleague of mine suggested of how do you offer a prayer to a group of people who many feel don't have a prayer? So I'll try. God, provide us with the strength to stay with our convictions despite all of the pulls and pressures upon us. Provide us with the humility to compromise when that is the appropriate path, and provide us with the wisdom to tell the difference. Help us to hear your voice among all of those competing voices that scream and yell and sometimes whisper for our attention, from the lobbyists, from our constituents, from our families, from our colleagues, and from all of those voices that appear on all of those funny little screens that we have to look at in different settings. Help us to find our deepest, highest levels of values and meaning and direction in our life. Help us to remember why it is that all of you entered public service, and with all of that assistance through all of the rest of the session, you might want to say, Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
With that order of business of Journal Committee report.
Your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of January 29th, 2013 has been read and recommends that be approved, signed by Representative Winters and Filer.
The doctor of the day today is Ron Malm, D.O. from Cheyenne. Dr. Malm, welcome to the House. Chairman Teeters, privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have a group of 12th graders from the finest farm ground in the state of Wyoming from Torrington. Please welcome Mr. Gross's 12th grade class to the House.
Welcome to the House. Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I get to do this second time this session already. Down from Washakie County, and as we all know, that's 2-0, second to none on your license plate. Here in the North Gallery is our new Mayor of Worland, Dave Duffy. V, please stand up. Welcome him to the People's House.
Anybody else want privilege of the floor? We're at that order of business of introduction, reading, and reference of bills. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 242.
House Bill 242 is introduced by Representative Laux.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to criminal procedure.
House Bill 242 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 257.
House Bill 257 is introduced by Representative Crone.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to employment.
House Bill 257 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 241.
House Bill 241, introduced by Representative Laux.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the geological survey.
House Bill 241 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. And the last House bill for introduction, House Bill 256.
House Bill 256, introduced by Representative Laux.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to licensure of denturists.
House Bill 256 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. We're now on that order of business of Senate files on first reading. The first Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 124.
Senate File 124, introduced by Senator Perkins.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to liens.
Senate File 124 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 77.
Senate File 77, introduced by Senator Schiffler.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to construction of community college facilities.
Senate File 77 is referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill Number, or Senate File Number 90.
Senate File Number 90, introduced by Senator Bebout.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to state lands.
Senate File 90 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 86.
Senate File 86, introduced by Senator J.D. Anderson.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to counties.
Senate File 86 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. And the last Senate file for our consideration today, Senate File 126.
Senate File 126, introduced by Senator Schiffer.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to motor vehicles.
Senate File 126 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. We're now at that order of business of reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, the committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 104, Firearm Protection Act, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Gingery, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, Watt, one no vote, Representative Connolly, signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 105, Citizens and Students Self-Defense Act, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Gingery, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Walters, Watt, one no vote, Representative Connolly, signed by Representative Gingery, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 8, School Capital Construction Capacity, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Escobel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stubson, and Wallace, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number three, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 215, State Investment for a Public Purpose, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye were Representatives Blickery, Goggles, Kirkbride, Laux, Madden, Northrop, Petroff, Semlich, one no vote, Representative Eklund, signed by Representative Madden, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number seven, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 77, Wyoming Lottery, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Lickery, Byrd, Green, Paxton, Petroff, Danswanitzer. Those who voted no, Representatives Berger, Gay, Kirkbride, signed by Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number eight, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 229, Regulation of Natural Gas as a Transportation Fuel, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Hutchings, Yeagy, Laux, McKim, Reeder, Dave Zwanitzer, and signed by David Zwanitzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 2, engrossed Oil and Gas Conservation Commission filings, respectfully reports saying back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Greer, Kasparik, Larson, Lockhart, Reeder, Summers, and Winters, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 3, State Oil and Gas Supervision Qualifications, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Greer, Kasparik, Larson, Lockhart, Reeder, Summers, and Winters, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom is referred Senate File 26, Authorization for Certain Radioactive Waste Facilities, respectfully reports saying back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Greer, Kasparik, Larson, Lockhart, Reeder, Summers, and Winters, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
We're at that order of business of consideration of bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 18.
House Bill number 18, as presented by corporations, an act revealing to public utilities.
House Bill 18 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 55.
House Bill 55, as introduced by Representative Greer, an act relating to environmental quality.
House Bill 55 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 123.
House Bill number 123 is introduced by Representative Petroff, an act relating to restaurant liquor licenses.
House Bill 123 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 130.
House Bill number 130, introduced by Representative Watt, an act relating to public school elective courses.
House Bill 130 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 131.
House Bill 131, introduced by Representative Yagi, an act relating to game fish.
House Bill 131 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 147.
House Bill 147, introduced by Representative Kasperic, an act relating to motor vehicle registration.
House Bill 147 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 155.
House Bill number 155, introduced by Representative Semlich, an act relating to penalties for violating fire bans.
House Bill 155, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 156.
House Bill 156 is introduced by Representative Hunt, an act relating to inspection of brands.
House Bill 156, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 161.
House Bill 161 is introduced by Representative Throne, an act relating to highways.
House Bill 161, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 163.
House Bill 163, introduced by Representative Freeman, an act relating to teachers.
House Bill 163, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 164.
House Bill 164, introduced by Representative Freeman, an act relating to school finance.
House Bill 164, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 179.
House Bill 179, introduced by Representative Halverson, an act relating to commercial motor vehicles.
House Bill 179, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 182.
House Bill 182 is introduced by Representative Croker, an act relating to highways.
House Bill 182, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 201.
House Bill 201, introduced by Representative Blevins, an act relating to non-testamentary transfers of real property.
Let's back up to House Bill 201, and it, there is an amendment. It is now being distributed on your desk. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 201 and ask for your favorable consideration. It's being distributed right now. There have been emails coming from the title companies. I've looked at all the questions in there. The LSO has looked at all the questions in there, and there is one question raised in those emails that gave me concern. So this is in response to that and fixes the one problem. The objection that was made was that there's no mechanism in there for a let me see exactly what they say here. Anyway, there's no mechanism in there for a transfer on death beneficiary to receive to refuse a gift, and so this adds a part, adds a section in the bill that would say that the grantee beneficiary can refuse to accept or all or all or any part of the interest conveyed by the transfer on death deed, and if they refuse to accept it, then they have no liability under this chapter by reason of being designated as a grantee beneficiary. It's a good catch by the title companies and a good change, and I would urge you to vote aye.
Any more discussion? Question being called, we're voting on second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 201. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment carries. House Bill 201 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 203.
House Bill 203 is introduced by Representative Harvey, an act relating to the administration of government and health insurance exchanges.
House Bill 203 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 208.
House Bill 208, introduced by Representative Larson, an act relating to education.
House Bill 208, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 223.
House Bill 223 is introduced by Representative Brown, an act relating to public records.
House Bill 223, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. We're at that order of business of bills on third reading and final passage consent list. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move the consent list consisting of the following bills. House Bill 26, 71, 152, and 191.
Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the House? The Chief Clerk will call the roll. Oh, after they're read.
House Bill number 26 is introduced by Corporations, an act relating to professions, be enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Bill number 71 from the Select Water Committee, an act relating to water development projects, be enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Bill number 152, introduced by Representative Filer, an act relating to motor vehicles, be enacted by the State of Wyoming. House Bill number 191 is introduced by Representative Green, an act relating to criminal history record information, be enacted by the State of Wyoming.
The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Flickrey.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Filer.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer. Green.
Aye.
Halverson.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Hutchings.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparik.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Croker.
Aye.
Crone.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Petroff.
Pieperinen. Aye.
Reeder.
Aye.
Semlick.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Walters.
Aye.
Watt.
Aye.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 60 aye. As to House Bill 26, are there any changes? Swanitzer Dan, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 59 aye, 1 no. As to House Bill 71, Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 60 aye. As to House Bill 152, are there any changes? Miller, aye to no. Halverson, aye to no. Baker, aye to no. Watt, aye to no. Croker, aye to no. Burkhart, aye to no. Laux, aye to no. Gay, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed, 52 aye, 8 no. As to House Bill 191, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 60 aye.
Having received the affirmative vote of a majority of the members elected to the House, House Bills 26, 71, 152, and 191 have passed the House. We are now at that order of business of third reading and final passage, regular list. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 81.
House Bill 81 is presented by the Select Natural Resource Funding Committee, an act relating to the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resources Funding Act be enacted by the state of Wyoming.
House Bill 81 has two amendments. House Bill 81 has three amendments. I have two of them with me. That's 177. House Bill 81 has got two amendments. Representative Wallace will start with yours, since the first one is delete the enacting clause. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I bring to you, I move third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 81 and ask for your favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, in the 62nd, I bring this amendment to you today because, quite frankly, the only way that I can support this bill is if this amendment passes. What the amendment does is remove all conservation easements from the bill and preserves the habitat and restoration projects. In dollars and cents, it cuts $7.1 million out of the state budget and keeps $785,720 in to deal with what I consider to be legitimate projects and ongoing projects that should be funded. You know, this whole discussion and this whole debate reminds me of an old rancher joke. What are you going to do with the $1 million you just received from selling off your conservation easements? And the old rancher says, "Oh, I guess I'll just keep ranching until it's gone." Or another one, what's the best cross on a Hereford cow? An oil well. So, folks, here's what the problem is. By locking this land up in conservation easements, we are adding those lands to the vast majority of Wyoming where our ability to develop and use the resources are already severely hampered because of split estates or they are federally controlled. The number of constraints on our land and our resources in Wyoming are already balled up in an almost unbelievable morass of federal, state, local control outside of private hands, rules and regulations that could probably fill this room, armies of bicoastal environmental radicals who know better than you do how you should manage your resources and your lives. It goes on and on. On your desks, there was a little sheaf of colored maps that went around, easy to find. While you're finding those, let me tell you about our place and some of the reasons that we decided this conservation easement was not the right answer for us. To put our place in context, on the second map, find the county in the northeast that has the most dark blue surface private federal coal and purple surface private all federal minerals. Now put your pencil just below our border to the north and about the middle of that county. That's our place. Split estate. We haven't been there all that long. My mom's people bought that ranch, a piece of which I now live on, right after World War II. But already, with my grandkids, we're working on a fifth generation there. Just about once a generation, ever since white people settled there, when times were tough, somebody needed to sell the timber off of that ranch. And we did. Also, once or twice a generation, we've had the chance to benefit from mineral development. Oil and gas beginning in the early 70s, coal bed methane. It has helped us immensely. With the conservation easement in place, we had no assurance that those opportunities would be available to our kids and grandkids. At a minimum, they're going to have to deal with a lot of bureaucracy, a lot more hassle, and a lot more entities who now have an ownership interest and a say in whatever you can make it do to make it through those times when interest rates shoot through the roof, or the price of calves goes to nothing because of a mad cow scare, or the drought stays a little too long, or grandma winds up needing long-term care. So, take a look at those maps. The one on the top shows the private surface in green and the sage-grouse core habitat areas outlined in red. The second one, now just kind of use your imagination and overlay the first one on top of the second one. The second one shows all the mineral lands in Wyoming that are already under varying degrees of control by somebody else in places far outside of the borders of Wyoming. And finally, we have a nice clean map that just shows the sage-grouse core habitat area and the existing conservation easements. I want you to note where the majority of those easements are. The blue dots are outside of the sage-grouse core. The red are inside. Note how few and how small they are and where they are clustered. Note where there is a complete and total absence, and compare that with what you know about where the bulk of the dollars that support our state budget come from. Also, in your pile of stuff that's landed in your desk this morning, is a facts from our leading livestock organization in the state. This one. And I want you to note the fifth bullet down, where it says the split estate oil and gas mineral interest underlying lands with an easement are protected by Wyoming statute. Mining interests are protected by the requirement prior to placement of an easement for a professional geological opinion that the presence of surface mineable in minerals is so remote as to be negligible. Okay? So the first point I want to make about that is why? Here's the fact. Our mine reclamation in this state is absolutely world class. It's the best there is in the world. When that habitat is restored, it is unquestionably better wildlife habitat, better agricultural ground than it ever was before it was mined. The second point I want to make about that is go back to that map with the county, with the dark blue and the purple, where, I don't know, what the figure is, but it's substantial. I think I've heard maybe 25% of our state budget comes out of that county because of the mining that's going on in that county. And compare that to the complete and total absence of conservation easements in that county. And I will tell you that that is because in places in that county, because there is coal 600 foot deep, where I will guarantee you it's going to be a long, long, long time and lots of cold, cold, cold winters and some other major international incidents before that coal is ever surface mined. And yet that's being used to prevent ranches in that county from taking advantage of these. So just leave that thought in your mind. Then, now, let's talk about the difference between North Dakota and Wyoming. Go back to that middle map, that mineral status map. And note that less than 20% of this state is white, meaning private surface, private minerals. If you were to look at a similar map of North Dakota, what you would see would be 97% white, meaning their mineral producers only have private surface and private owners to deal with. They don't have to fight their way through multiple government agencies at every level. The legions of radical organizations have no toehold and no standing to interfere. They control their own destiny. So we've heard testimony that we needed to fund these conservation easements because they were promises made, commitments made that we need to honor. No, they're not. By law, they cannot be commitments made until this body appropriates the dollars for them. These are not ongoing projects. These are one-time lump sum payments to individual ranch families in favored parts of the state. Can these projects go forward without state dollars? Of course they can. There are federal dollars available that even though we might be philosophically opposed to the use of them for this purpose, that is a question for Congress, not the Wyoming legislature. There's nothing stopping private philanthropic organizations or individuals from stepping up to fund these easements. I don't think any of us have a problem with that. And I would submit to you that that is, in fact, the proper funding source. Also, there's one last packet I want to take a look at, and on the top sheet is an email, Gmail, addressed to me. But what I want to call your attention to is below it. The second sheet is a spreadsheet that kind of reflects the information that you saw on the colored map of the sage-grouse core habitat and the conservation easements. And it basically tells you who are the easement holders in Wyoming and who are the holders of the easements inside of the sage-grouse core area. Then, oops. The next page is just a spreadsheet simply showing you that with this amendment, what is preserved in the amendment that would be funded out of the state budget and the total $7.1 million that would be taken off if this amendment succeeds. And then finally, there is an excerpt from our summary of major trust funds. This is a LSO document where I would point out to you that this entire trust has been completely and totally funded by general fund dollars. So, essentially what we're doing by funding these conservation easements with state tax dollars that I have just pointed out to you have originated from our general fund in years past. General fund dollars that are, quite frankly, almost entirely the result of mineral development in the state, are using those mineral dollars that were responsibly developed to the great benefit to the state, and we are using them to benefit a small handful of private families and allow the creation of what is essentially private wilderness areas. In places where we still have some control, and forever taking away our right to develop those resources or meet the needs of future generations of that family, or indeed future generations of our entire state. So I ask you, is this a legitimate use of our state tax dollars? If your answer, like mine, is no, then your vote on this amendment would be yes. And if enough of you agree with me on this amendment to pass, then my vote on this bill will be yes. If not, then my vote on the entire bill will be no. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Wallace. I'm glad you found an amendment you're passionate about. Remind me to use the restroom before you do another amendment. Representative Summers.
Mr. Speaker, fellow members, I stand on and against this amendment and for the bill. When the Wyoming Natural Resource Trust Fund was created, this program was created in 2005. Eight specific areas of focus were named in the statute. Second of those mandates was preservation of open spaces by purchase or acquisition of development rights. In 2012, the legislature instructed the Wyoming Natural Resource Trust Fund to allocate $10 million over the biennium for the purchase of conservation easements in sage-grouse core areas. House Bill 81 includes approximately $5.3 million, or half of the biennial allocation for easements in sage-grouse core areas, as mandated by the Wyoming legislature. So these good folks went out, received applications for what they thought were correct. Those applicants, thinking they were justified in doing so, brought forth good projects to this body based upon this body's or previous body's instructions. For that reason alone, I think we should defeat this amendment and pass that bill. As it relates to sage-grouse, I guess I come from an area where we are core sage-grouse, and our county also represents a significant portion of this state's budget revenues. This last spring, I went to the city of the Blue football field and testified before the good judge who Don Quixote's lance was tilted at. And it was an interesting experience and one that kind of shook me to my core, realizing how precarious we are in Wyoming with this bird and the effects of regulation around this bird and what it could do to our custom and culture in this state. The agency that looks over the Endangered Species Act has suggested that, whether we like it or not, they determine what they think are the causes for these declines and the future impediment of these species. And fragmentation of habitat is one of those. They have stated that conservation easements are a means by which to reduce fragmentation, and they look favorably on that. That is probably why this body at one time chose to put money into this. We need to pay attention to that. We need to support these projects. These are good for family ranches, and I just hope that you would not support this amendment and would support the bill. Thank you.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Madam Speaker Pro Tem. I rise in opposition to this amendment, and my passion for energy and mineral development is equally as strong as the proponent of this amendment. Like many of us here, we all have multiple hats. I'm a landowner, a mineral owner, and an energy lawyer. The good sponsor of the amendment and I want to get to the same place, but we certainly are choosing different paths for getting there. I also have a rancher line that was used by my father, which is that those mineral-fed cows do a lot better than the grass-fed cows. He was usually referring to our neighbors who seemed to have more mineral development than we did. But in any event, this bill and these easements are about protecting the development of mineral resources in our state. I certainly have heard nothing but support from the mineral industry for conservation easements, because they do believe that it helps us prevent the listing of sage grouse, which, if it's ever listed, will be a serious problem for our future development. I think I also want the body to remember that the mineral, and then, and again, I'm speaking from my private practice life, the mineral estate is dominant, 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 dominant. We have some of the strongest laws on the books to protect the mineral estate. As I said, I appreciate the sponsor's passion. We both share a passion for energy development, but her passion, I think, is misplaced, because if this amendment passes, it does not help the development of minerals in this state. It actually harms them. So I'd urge you to defeat the amendment and support the bill.
Chairman Simlick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had a great discussion about this on Committee of the Whole, and I told my story, and I'm sticking to it. There are people who just categorically disagree with what I had to say, but they said everything you said was true, so I didn't want to try to embellish it. My interest and support of this amendment really is to focus on the state funding portion of conservation easements. The rest of the work that the fund has done has been commendable, and those who have worked on that project over the last 7 years have their work has been commendable. But the question we have to ask ourselves with this issue that we have before us on this third reading amendment is, can we justify the state support of $7.4 million or whatever that amount is to say that this gets us out of the problems that we believe we might have with sage grouse? And all I can tell you is that I'm not compelled by that. And the reason I'm not is because you look at the number of acres that are covered under the conservation easements that are publicly funded in relationship to the total core areas in Wyoming, that percentage is minuscule, less than 5% and maybe less than 1%. So we agree that the detrimental effects that listing the sage grouse could have, but I don't think with the investment of public money where we have priorities and we look at all the other needs and say if we could try to address any problem we have in the state by only addressing 1% of it, would this really be the effective use of our money? And I would submit to you that it probably would not be. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've heard a number of reasons of why we need these easements, and we hear they are beneficial to the state, mainly because of what would happen if the sage grouse was a listed species in Wyoming. It probably won't be listed in just Wyoming. It'd be listed all over the United States. And right now, there is a very strong chance, without good control, without doing something for this bird, we could find it listed. California lost most of their habitat due to fires. That is going to push this way as being some of the last remaining habitat. Now, if it does get listed, just a few points to consider. The management of this bird goes from the state of Wyoming, from Game and Fish, to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We now deal with those people in anything we do that affects this bird. Probably individual birds will be looked at in terms of disturbance from projects, and that would be any project. Each and every bird will be looked at in that manner. One bird can hold up a mine, can hold up any sort of development. Because the way the core areas are and this bird needs unfragmented land to survive, all the core areas are now critical habitat. Those core areas would probably be linked if U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service takes over administration of this bird. That would mean roughly 75% of the state would be considered part of their critical habitat because of the core areas. And while private land is not subject to Section 7 in the EPA rules, there is a prohibition against taking an endangered species. Now, I think all of us have an understanding of what we think taking means. Well, I'm going to go and kill the thing. No, taking doesn't mean that. What taking means is you bothered it. You made it fly away from its nest. It flew into the side of your truck and it died. That's all a taking. And U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will now come and have an interesting discussion with you. Find a dead endangered species on your land, and you'll find out how much grief there is to dealing with that agency over it. You almost have to prove to them that it may have died of natural causes. I've been there and had to do that. If the bird is listed, what does it mean? It means the federal government pretty much controls all the land that bird is on in some way or another, either by influence or actual control. In Wyoming, our economy is based on tourism, agriculture, and minerals extraction. Whether we like it or not, that's just the way things are. If you look just at oil and gas, based on the property taxes, severance taxes, royalties, sales and use taxes, they put roughly $2.4 billion into the state's economy. If the bird gets listed, that drops to half, probably very close to immediately, and will decline thereafter. In some of our counties, the one named after Cole, 79% of their property tax and ad valorem taxes come from oil and gas. In the county with the nice bubbling springs, 79%. In the county that had the famous war about 100 years ago, 91%. In the county named after the famous explorer in the middle of the state where most of this is concentrated, 96% of their property tax and ad valorem tax come from the oil and gas industry. That will all drop to at least half by most estimates. The state total for those incomes will drop by about 51%, give or take a little bit. It is up to us to preserve that income. I don't think any of us want to take a $1.2 billion hit on our economy rather than spend a little bit of money now on these easements to stop some of the fragmentation and to keep that bird from being listed. And there are groups that want that bird listed, and it won't be the last one. And frankly, most oil and gas companies are willing to spend a lot of money to study some of these animals. Hundreds of thousands of dollars that they donate to study things like the mountain plover, which you can't tell from a regular plover other than it lives on hills rather than near water, and some other animals like that. So what I would implore you to do is consider even the economic impact of listing this bird in the state. And for the ranchers, some of your cattle steps on a nest and breaks the eggs if it's listed. That's a taking. You may have to answer for it. I don't know if you would or not, but there's a real possibility. So just from the economic standpoint, we need to keep the bird off the listing. The other thing is, I enjoy going out in the prairie in a lot of these areas that are considered core areas. If you want to be alone at night, go out in the middle of the red desert and turn off the lights in your truck and just sit there. You can't be alone in the mountains. There are too many people. And you're out there with the sage grouse, yeah, but you probably won't know it. They don't do much at night. But that's where the solitude is here. That could be off limits to tourism, to hunting, to fishing, to anything that could potentially cause a takings of the bird. So against the amendment for the bill, and I ask you to consider, you know, the implications of passing this amendment at this time. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, on and against the amendment, I'm going to speak strictly to the amendment and some of the things that I heard in the presentation that just need to be factually fleshed out here. Number one, it's true there's general fund money that's been expended for these in the past. That's because we put the money in there. And first, we went to the Wildlife Trust Fund, as it's authorized under the statutes, and through the original statute and the budgetary amendments that were described, we told them to go do this sort of thing. And then we said, you know, that trust fund's supposed to be $200 million, which would yield a return. It's only at about $99 million right now, but we'll make it work like a $200 million trust fund by augmenting the operating money in that with general fund money. That's where the general fund money came from. And we put it there with direction to use it that way. Now, I just find it interesting that the bringer of this amendment considered the choice about whether to do one of these conservation easements or not and decided, made a decision, perfectly rational, perfectly proper, not to do it. Does that mean now the bringer brings this amendment here and says, I want to deny everybody else the same chance that I had? The irony of that I can't escape. Now, as to mineral development, let's be sure what we're talking about here. We have, in some parts of Wyoming, we have what are called split estate. Some parts of Wyoming, we have a unified estate. Unified estate means that the surface and the minerals are owned by the same party. Split estate means that they are owned by different parties. And sometime, I did it once here on the floor when we worked on split estates years ago, there's a case, and I'd have to pull that case and look at it to give you all the history, but I could give you the whole history of split estates. Interestingly enough, the whole concept of split estates was created by one of America's greatest conservationists. And I don't think I can mention his name, but he was president of the United States and one of the greatest conservationists, and there's a picture up here in one of these rooms of him riding horseback down the street in Cheyenne, I think in 1916, when he was president of the United States. He's the one that created split estates. Now, if it's a unified estate, and the same owner owns the surface and the minerals, and that owner chooses to put a conservation easement on the property, then that conservation easement is binding on the surface and the minerals, and say those, and it'll dictate whether those can be developed, and if so, under what conditions. That's fine. Then we get to the split estate, where the surface is owned by one party, the subsurface, the mineral estate, is owned by another. And they can even be subdivided. I just did a deal where I divided the mineral estate at 2,500 foot of depth. And I have a different ownership from the surface down to 2,500 feet than is owned from 2,500 feet to the center of the earth. So those are split estates. Now, the question comes, can the surface owner of a split estate do a conservation easement? Well, sure he can, but what's the problem? The mineral estate is always dominant. The surface estate's the serving estate. The mineral estate owner can always develop his minerals. He doesn't even have to have permission. The only permission he has to have from the surface owner is some artificial things that we've created by statute. But the pure law is the mineral estate's dominant, the surface estate's servient, the mineral estate can come in and develop his minerals and use as much of the surface as he needs to do the minerals. And I remember a case in law school where the most egregious one probably that they were ever able to find where there wasn't any ameliorating statutes. The mineral estate owner came in and developed his oil and gas, appropriated as much of the serving estate as he took. On the serving estate, which was a house which is in the way, and he figured out a way not to tear down the house, but he put the pump jack in there, so it went up and down. And the only time you could get out of the house is when the pump jack was up. You could swing the door and go through, and then you had to get it closed again before the pump jack came back down. Now, that's the dominance of the mineral estate. Now, what about this business in this memorandum about a geologic opinion that the presence of the surface, mineable minerals is so remote as to be negligible. Okay, here's what's going on. If a person doesn't want to qualify this for the Internal Revenue or for tax credits under the Internal Revenue Code, they don't need to worry about that negligibility. But certainly, if there's a viable mineral estate with developable minerals under a surface estate, and that surface estate owner is trying to put a conservation easement on there that's worth something, then it's not going to be worth very much if the dominant mineral estate owner can come in and the conservation easement can't stop him from doing it. He's still the dominant estate, and he can come in and develop his minerals. So the Internal Revenue Code says, well, that's pretty much a worthless conservation easement because the mineral estate owner can come in and wreck it anytime he decides he wants to do his minerals. But then the IRS said, well, if there really isn't any minerals there that amounts to anything, then maybe the conservation easement would be worth something to us. So the Internal Revenue Code says, and I've done this, that if you have a surface estate owner who's trying to do a conservation easement, you have a mineral estate underneath, but you can get an opinion from a geologist that either says there's no minerals there or they're so remote as to be negligible, then we'll go ahead and recognize some value to the surface estate. But if there are minerals there that are just primed, they're in the hopper, ready to be developed, then the surface estate conservation easement isn't worth anything, and the IRS won't give a tax credit for it. So that part's all tax-driven. And I hope that you won't be steered off course by that confusion about that. It doesn't have to be so remote as to be negligible in order to have a conservation easement. It's just a matter of whether you're going to qualify for a tax credit or not. And clearly, if it's a unified estate, it doesn't have to be that, because that owner then owns both the surface and the minerals. Most of these conservation easements now, because of technology, and it's been a blessing to everybody, technology has bailed us out of a lot of these problems. And as I said the other day, you can't strip it. But aside from stripping it, most of these conservation easements have mineral development on them, in situ mining, directional drilling for oil and gas, all that can take place. And it's reserved in those easements, and it's allowed. And you can still, everybody can still come out with what they want, because by restricting it to directional drilling and in situ mining, the IRS says, okay, there's really some value there to the surface restriction that we're getting, and so they'll give a tax credit for it. Now, just one last thing. This complaining about who holds the easement. Well, if you want one, I'd have to get you qualified as a 501c3, but you could be a holder. Well, what would you have, for Pete's sake? You're the holder of an easement that restricts development on the surface. What would you have? What would you own? The real beneficiary in these easements is the public. And that's why the state of Wyoming, we had that amendment that makes the state of Wyoming a third-party beneficiary, because they're really for a public purpose. It's really not very relevant who holds the easement, because they can't do anything with it except enforce it. And they have to be enforced. And if they're not enforced, the state of Wyoming as a third-party beneficiary can come in and say, we're going to enforce that easement and the restrictions that are on the land. But I just don't understand all this carping about who holds the easement, because the easement holder is bound by the language in the conservation easement document, which is of record in the public records, and every time you pull a title commitment on it, it's going to pop up as a restriction on the property, and that's the extent of what they own. And they can enforce it, and some of them do. They do their due diligence, but if they don't, as a last resort, the state will come in and enforce it. And so they don't have any greater rights than the state of Wyoming has with respect to enforcement of that easement. So I hope that answers some of the questions about this amendment, and I'm on and against the amendment.
Representative Summers, for your second time.
Madam Chair, fellow members, thank you. One final thought. Once again, I'm against the amendment, for the bill. The one thing you need to understand, and one of the questions that centers around this is, you know, conservation easements are in perpetuity, and what will happen out there in the future to this land if we need it. You know, frankly, don't forget we have eminent domain. If at any time in the future this nation needs those resources or that land, it will be taken by eminent domain. And by the way, the state will get their cut because that's how these things are written. But those things will be developed. We've already in America taken land for a shopping mall back east. I think we'll take land if we need those valuable resources on it. So I think that that argument against perpetuity is moot. Thank you.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you. I'm going to try and address some of the things that have been brought up. To the point that the contention was made that the only way that these easements would be disallowed was for tax credits if there were minerals lying in a split estate underneath. And I'm just going to correct that because our family did go through the complete process. We did work with several different entities. We went through the entire process, and the application, we were considering moving forward. We were debating among ourselves. There were a number of reasons why when we were informed that our place could not be put in a conservation easement, rather late in the game, we weren't very distressed by that because we'd already been conflicted enough as a family, and the family had decided that because one of the reasons that we didn't want to do it was because of the future generation things that I've already talked about and the things that we have used our ranch for in the past and not being able to see into the future to see what our grandkids and their kids would be needing. But another reason that definitely played into that thinking was the fact that this was tax dollars. And we didn't feel good about the idea, the notion that our family would be privately benefiting from public tax dollars. That's a kind of a core principle that we have always stood upon, that we didn't approve of that for other private businesses, and we didn't feel good about accepting that for ourselves. But the truth is that aside from those concerns that our family ultimately had determined it wasn't for us, the fact is we couldn't have if we wanted to because of the split estate and the fact that it was all federal minerals underlying the property, and that because there was coal bed methane development on the ranch, 600 feet and 1,200 feet deep, that de facto, according to the agencies involved, proved that there was a possibility of strip mining. And because of that, the federal dollars, and mind you, almost all of these projects are heavily funded by federal government dollars to the tune of 50% or more, that the federal dollars could not be used on a property where the minerals were held in federal hands and there was the possibility of strip mining, even though it was 600 foot deep. So this really didn't have anything to do with tax credits. This had everything to do with the availability of federal funds, that was denied. And, you know, we've heard it said that the reason we have to do this is because of the huge economic impacts of listing the sage grouse. I don't dispute any of that. There will be huge economic impacts if that bird is listed. But really, is this the only solution? Go back to that map. Go back to that map that shows the conservation easements in relationship to the sage grass core area. Take a look at just how tiny that area is inside that core habitat. And I ask you, really? The only way that we can keep from that bird being listed is by forking over state dollars to a tiny minority of ranch families. Now, all those other ranch families are going to be out there preserving open space. Why do we think it's a good use of our tax dollars to benefit just a very few? And the bird itself. You know, there have been studies conducted in this state that show that that bird actually goes towards development. Up in the basin, there was a study conducted over the last few years that showed that the main reason those birds were being impacted was because of predation from coyotes, from ravens, from snakes, from a lot of different things. And what they discovered was that when a hen set on a nest, there and lost that nest to a raven or a snake, the first thing she did was move away from the classic sagebrush habitat and go make her nest right next to the road, where people were driving them back and forth all the time, because she was protected from the predators there. I can tell you that my own experience has verified that, because we have sage grass leks that have been on both sides of the county road that I rode the school bus back and forth to school for my entire elementary school career, dancing in the spring, raising their chicks through the summer, year in, year out, with the county road running right through the middle of them. So the idea that these birds need unfragmented land, I think, can easily be disputed by experts who have done the scientific studies to prove it. And finally, Madam Speaker Pro Tem, you know, I think we have heard a few things that have indicated that just the mechanics of how these conservation easements work, every one of them is different, we've heard. Every one of them has different kinds of conditions. So here you have lots of them, apparently, do allow for development. Do allow for home sites. Multiple home sites to be reserved for the future that don't exist now. So what you're doing is you're paying a large sum of money with public tax dollars that helps a single family who is then able to put up multiple home sites, which in fact enhances the value of the surrounding land and enhances the value of the home sites. So we're all garbled up here with these conservation easements with a lot of private benefit and public dollars. And so I just ask you to think about that a little bit and vote your conscience. Thank you.
The question being called on third reading, amendment number 2 to House Bill 81. All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed?
No.
The amendment has failed. We're on the first reading amendment to House Bill 81, Representative, it's the third reading, Representative Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move
third reading, Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 81, and we'll withdraw it probably shortly here unless someone gets up to the mic. Not more to add after that debate there. Just looking at some of this information that's been provided by the previous speakers, it's good information. It talks about the raptors and fewer sage grouse. They all kind of correlate with protecting the raptors, really not associated with development activities. One interesting quote is, these conservation easements are just an incremental way to gain more control of the land. And that's what they really are. It's an incremental way to prevent some of these mineral development activities, amongst other activities in the future. And it's going to harm the future in Wyoming, the ability to generate mineral revenue. So on and against the bill for the amendment, and if no one gets up, I withdraw the amendment.
House Bill 81 having been read, Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, I'm even getting tired of hearing myself talk a bit about this. So
that's why I thought we were done, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I know. I'm going to be brief, but I just got to say one thing. I think some of the difference in opinion about this might depend on which part of the state a person's from and how intense the development pressure is and how intense the subdivision pressure is. And it's easy to take things for granted until they're gone. And I happen to live in a part of the state where they're gone in many places. There's precedent for this. There's a picture, I think it's 1953, of the grandfather of our chief executive in Jackson Hole with a famous actor and some other guys horseback, all brandishing carbines, stating their defiance and their resistance to an extremely wealthy family that was buying up Jackson Hole and eventually donated it to the government, and it became a national park. That person said later in his life it was the worst mistake he ever made. Now, there's a road that goes from the city that I live in to the mountains. I suspect most of you have been on it at one time or another. And that road is an interesting contrast. As you go toward the mountain, so you're going west, on the right is unbroken rangeland with some mineral development and beautiful vistas. And there's a mare herd that runs out there, owned by a family in Laramie that's bred horses for a long time. They're really into roans. There's a lot of roans, blue roans, strawberry roans, and there's a couple of Garula mares out there. I always wanted a Garula. My partner always told me, when you start buying for color, you're in deep trouble. So I never ended up with a Garula. But it's the most typical Wyoming landscape that I could describe. And sometimes Margaret and I even stop there in the evening to watch the sunsets, or stop in the evening just to watch the mares and the babies. And as the babies grow up and they start playing, well, they're really fun to watch. It's fun to watch how they move and all that sort of thing. On the other side of the road is development. It's a large land mass. It was purchased by some people out of state, no in-state money in it. They chopped it all up into 40s, and they're building houses. And what's really weird about it is you can't get a well out there. They're all hauling water from town for their houses. You cannot get a well in the out there. Now, in addition, on the south side, on the left of the road, there's a great big scoured out area. That's really a geologic phenomenon. And we used to have, I don't know how many of us remember, we used to have a geology teacher at the university who was famous for being able to draw a perfect circle. And he commented about that geologic wonder and called it one of the great wonders of Wyoming because it was scoured out by the wind. And then it sodded over. It's a short grass prairie. Now it's just being chopped up, house after house after house, fences, roads, whatever. Now, on the right side of the road, there's still wildlife and there's still elk migration. And the elk go to the mountain in the summer and they come back in the winter. They migrate back and forth. On the left side of the road, the wildlife's gone, the migration's gone, there's nothing left. Now, mineral development. On the right side of the road, mineral development is still possible. On the left side of the road, mineral development has been precluded. It is not going to happen. Not without all chopped up in 40-acre parcels. It is just isn't going to be permitted. It would be a nightmare to try to develop minerals in there. Now, the property owner on the north looks across the road at the other side, and he has a chance to sell, and he's talked to me about it. And he's got a chance to sell. I don't know what he'll do. I hope he does nothing. But he has two choices. He can sell the fee and go into the 40-acre subdividing business. And when he does, the mineral development's gone, the wildlife's gone, the habitat's gone, everything's gone. It just becomes like the other side of the road. His choice would be to sell a conservation easement funded from multiple sources, but lots of federal dollars, dollars from the tax dollars from the people of the state of Wyoming. And if he chose to do that and sold just that part of his ranch, he could. The mare herd would still be there. The sunsets would still be there. The wildlife would be there. We're not going to have any houses. He's going to do what he always wanted to do. And life as we know it basically can go on. And so I would just leave you with this choice. And if he sells that conservation easement to some group that just drives you crazy, so what? All they can do with it is do what the state of Wyoming wants done, which is written in that easement and becomes a part of the real property record. So I would just leave you with this question. If he sells, do you want the right side of the road or do you want the left side of the road? If you want the left side of the road, you're going to vote for this amendment. If you want the right side of the road, you'll vote against this amendment and for the bill.
Representative Miller.
For my second time, Madam Chair. That was a kind of a great closing argument. We all want the wide open spaces in Wyoming. And I'm just so sorry that the folks here in Wyoming, our constituents, have done all these bad things for the last 150 years, that Wyoming is still the great place that it is right now. But why are these one percenters moving to the state, buying up some of these ranches and making conservation easements? Why is that? Is it because we've done everything so bad for the last 150 years? No, we've been doing things right here in Wyoming. You know, on and against the bill, and I think we've had plenty of discussion, and I ask you to vote no. And Mr. Speaker, I withdraw the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Miller. We are now voting. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall House Bill 81 pass the House? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
No.
Barlow.
Yes.
Barlow.
Yes. Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Blickrey.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison. Eklund.
No.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Filer.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
No.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
Aye.
Green.
Aye.
Halverson.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
No.
Hunt.
Aye.
Hutchings.
No.
Yagi.
No.
Kasparic. Kasparic. Kirkbride. Croker.
No.
Crone.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux.
No.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrup.
Aye.
Patton.
No.
Paxton.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Piperinen.
No.
Reeder.
No.
Simlick.
No.
Summers.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
No.
Throne. Wallace.
No.
Walters.
No.
Watt.
No.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winters.
No.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 39 aye, 21 no.
House Bill 81, having received an affirmative vote of the majority of members elected to the House, House Bill 81 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 94.
House Bill 94 is introduced by Representative Reeder, an act relating to the Wyoming Pharmacy Act be enacted by the state of Wyoming.
House Bill 94, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
Aye.
Barlow.
No.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Flickrey.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
No.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
No.
Esquivel. Esquivel,
no.
Filer,
aye.
Freeman,
no.
Gay,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
aye.
Green,
aye.
Halverson,
aye.
Harshman,
no.
Harvey,
no.
Hunt,
aye.
Hutchings,
no.
Yagi, Kasparic,
no.
Kirkbride,
no.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Larson, Lockhart,
no.
Laux,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
no.
Northrup,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Paxton,
no.
Petroff, Pieperinen, Reeder,
aye.
Simlick,
aye.
Summers,
no.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Walters, Watt,
aye.
Wilson,
no.
Winters,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan,
aye.
Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
no.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Berger, aye to no. Lockhart, no to aye. Davison, aye to no. Blickrey, aye to no. Blake, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 39 aye, 21 no.
House Bill 94, having received an affirmative vote of a majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 94 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 177. Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number one to House Bill 77 and will withdraw at the appropriate time. Members, I just want to talk to you about three or four things. First of all, appreciate the sponsors of this bill. It gives us an opportunity to talk about the halfway scholarship. I think if you look back at the last boom in the 70s.
Excuse me, point of order. The bill needs to be read in, please.
I'm just so excited.
I think you jumped the starting line.
Sorry, I'll reset.
Okay.
All right, House Bill 177 is introduced by Representative Crone, an act relating to the Hathaway Student Scholarship Program be enacted by the state of Wyoming.
Now,
thank you,
Representative Harshman.
So I won't start over. So the last energy boom probably was the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund. It's an unbelievable thing. Many of the guys that sat in those back chairs with the Air Force desk could still smoke in those days on the floor or have your spittoon, created that. And in hindsight, I mean, it was an unbelievable thing. And then we added to that 10, 15 years ago where we could invest in equities. We created a spending policy for it. I set it up like the Harvard-Yale Trust. It's unbelievable. And that'll grow and grow and continue to grow and provide revenue forever. And so this last boom that we might still kind of be in, really the legacy is the Hathaway Scholarship. $500 million now. To really honor our Constitution, to make education as free as possible at our university. So appreciate the bringers of the bill. We get to talk about it some more, and I think that's always a good thing. I just want to speak specifically about three or four things. I put in your tray, there's a handout. It has the title of the high school that I work at. So I think it's just been delivered. It should be towards the top of your tray. And
when I saw some statistics from another sister school in the middle of the state, I was a little perplexed because that would mean we'd be laying off those teachers in those areas. And I just haven't heard that, I guess, in my channels in education, because all schools really do interest-based scheduling. So what the kids sign up for, they offer. And then the teachers teach that. Well, here's some examples I called home, or actually emailed home to our office manager, and she got this data for me. And so you can look at the enrollment, 16% increase. I think we're the second largest school in the state behind the Campbell County, the purple school colors. And but you can see the CTE enrollment. That's the vocational, technical, career technical education enrollment. Those are sections growing by 970. And this is all corresponds with it when the Hathaway rolled out, 55% increase. Fine and performing arts, you can see the tremendous jump, 193%. So that's one school, a large school in the state. But I guess my point was what I made the other day. It's really about those leaders in those programs. Kids will come to them, okay? And I get worried about bills like this because they kind of become the Fair Employment Act for certain disciplines. And I think I want to talk about that in a minute. So the next thing I think is to really talk about what's happening. Is the success curricula working? We've only had it fully rolled out for 2 years. Well, ACT scores at the University of Wyoming have steadily risen. ACT scores in our state have jumped the last 2 years. There's only 9 states in the United States that test every 11th grader. We're one of those 9. So you don't compare us against the whole United States because the rest of those are just college-bound kids. We test everybody on the ACT, every 11th grader. Well, we're sitting third or fourth now out of those 9, and we're continuing to move up. I think Colorado's ahead of us. Illinois is ahead of us. Might be North Dakota as well. And we'll catch them. I mean, we're on that trajectory. And particularly now that this body's decided that the ACT will be the accountability test in 11th grade, not the PAWS and the ACT. It's going to be the ACT. We've got our sights squarely set on this. So the scores have continued to rise. The success curricula is working. Kids are taking more algebra, more math. Okay? And then I think the other part of this, there's a change in the provisional Hathaway, and it's in that part of the bill. Most of those kids, we say, are the career tech type kids. We're going to put more requirements on those folks, and I don't know that more is better. It's simply more. And then finally, the last really point is Wyoming is unique where we have 12 content areas. In our statute, we have standards for all those, and we require kids to take all those 12 content areas. Most states only have 2 or 3. Most are, you know, English and math, and some states have science. But Wyoming has valued all these content areas. So all our kids are going to have exposure in those 12 content areas. Every student will take a fine and performing arts at some point and take a career technical education class at some point and be allowed to follow their passion. So it's not about this being for this content area or against this content area. I mean, all of us are pretty well-rounded. I think probably many of us. I mean, I was a marching band kid, played the trumpet forever. All my kids I've forced to play musical instruments because I understand the value. One of my colleagues is the biggest proponent of this. She leads the fine arts folks in the state. She was my high school art teacher when I made some quite impressive stained glass. And so it's not about that. It's not about these pitting our content areas against one another. The issue is really how do we set a success curricula that is kind of just right? Not too much, not too little. And so what are the important things? And so we've tried to make the important things important in a way that doesn't hinder people, doesn't, you know, delay anybody, doesn't really discourage choice for our kids and our parents to follow their passions. And this bill, I'm afraid, does that. And so I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chairman Harshman. Representative Greer.
Yeah, Madam Speaker Pro Tem, thank you. I rise in opposition to the bill. Good things were just settled. Just take a little different perspective, and the reason for that is I have 2 children 11 months apart. My daughter's youngest just graduated. Unfortunately, they went to college out of state. However, they were both qualified for the Hathaway Scholarship, something that we made sure happened. And I can recall those early days of sitting in some meetings at the school and talking to counselors and just figuring out what we need to do and to get that lined out, and took a little time with our children to make sure that they were going to follow through and be able to qualify. Each time that we try to change this, each time we change it, we make it that much more difficult for parents and students to be able to map out their future success. Now, my children also participated in the arts. My daughter in particular worked diligently on the yearbook and spent a great part of her life in that endeavor. The opportunities exist there. One other point I'd like to make in seeing our district in particular go through the scheduling, these changes make it more difficult for them to sit down their schedule and allow the students to go ahead and qualify for the Hathaway Scholarship. We have to quit monkeying with it. We are hitting some of those core areas that have been proven to be necessary for children to move on to college and be successful, regardless if they go out of state or to the University of Wyoming. That's math, reading and writing, science, and our foreign language. Please vote against this amendment, and I will say, or against the bill. And I'm going to say this, if you vote this bill down, you're not voting against the arts. You're just voting for the long-term success of the Hathaway program.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Madam Speaker Pro Tem. Rather than talk about what I've talked about the last two debates, I thought I would, you know, that this bill increases rigor, that this bill actually increases opportunities for students, and knowing that the good chairman of Appropriations was going to have some comments today, I thought I would use an analogy, and it's not about conservation easements or sage grouse. It's a football analogy. But before I get to the football analogy, I think it's really important to mention that the Hathaway is an excellent program, and the reason it's an excellent program was a lot of hard work was put in this body by members of this body, including the chairman of Appropriations. Hathaway is working, but the plan, the program could be improved. And getting into my football analogy, I had a chance to play on a state championship football team in the city that Buffalo Bill founded, and we had a hard-headed coach. And that hard-headed coach believed in one type of offense. And that offense worked. It was very effective. It was a running offense, and it was a 3 yards and a cloud of dust offense. But we had some other talented players that didn't fit into that system. So that coach, although he was hard-headed, made some adjustments. And he adjusted the offense to meet the needs of those other talented players. So because of those adjustments, we were even more successful. I would ask and urge the body to make adjustments to this successful program to make it better. Let's increase rigor. Let's increase opportunity. Please vote against the amendment and for the bill. Thank you.
Chairman Semlek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is not a subject that's not important to me. It's just I don't normally speak on until last few months. I've had the CTE instructors at my small school have come to me and said, we've had 20, 25 kids in our classes, and now we're down to 7 or 8. And I think the good chair of appropriations, the data that he presented to you, I think is probably, you know, that's what happens in the larger schools. But in the smaller schools, I think it complicates it. So I think this bill helps that matter. We've got 2,000 kids less that have enrolled in the CTE classes, and I think it's just more difficult in these small schools. If you're on that pathway in the Hathaway plan, it sweeps kids out of the CTE classes. Now, I didn't pass this around to you, but here's some information coming from the Wyoming Department of Education. On the Hathaway Scholarship students in their senior year after 4 years of college, the percent of high school students achieving a certificate degree is only 35%. And when you look at the 5-year program, which most of our kids were on, at least mine were,
in college, that graduation rate increases some to 44%. That's not really my point. My point is that if we don't add some flexibility that we find in 177, you sweep these kids out of these CTE classes, and then two-thirds of them after 4 years of college are not graduating anyway. So if you want to get a good job in Wyoming, you do it in the natural resource industry and in the development industry, and these are the classes that train these kids to do that. So it's really a workforce development plan. I think a little flexibility that's in this bill is fine, and I would encourage you to support it.
Mr. Speaker?
Thank you, Madam Speaker Pro Tem. On this hump day, I appreciate the good chairman of appropriation wearing camel to salute my alma mater. In new legislator school, I told the freshmen that there are some bills that we should just have signs, and everybody just hold up their signs, and that would save hours of debate on the floor. You can call this sign number 17 for speech number 17. In my tenure in the legislature, since we started the Hathaway Scholarship in 2006, I count that this is the 23rd time that we've debated this issue. We debated it when we started the Hathaway Scholarship in 06. We tried to change it in 07. We changed it in 08. We changed it in 09. There were bills in 10 and 11, and here we are in 13 with another bill to change the Hathaway Success Curriculum. And there just has to come a time where the tinkering has to end. This program evolved not as an entitlement, but as a scholarship program that was earned by scholarship students that wanted to go to school and met those certain requirements that we asked them to meet. And we've had, over the years, different folks go, well, I'm as valuable as they are. Why don't you include me in the list? Well, all of those classes are valuable, and all of them are important. If they weren't valuable and they weren't important, we wouldn't offer the classes. But the Hathaway Success Curriculum was developed with a very broad yet narrow list of things that you had to do that were precursors to college success. And when we spread that out and diffuse that out, that defeats what we're doing and the success that we've begun having. We have this weird supply and demand thing where you say, well, if we encourage kids to take this course, then we won't be able to offer that course. Well, those courses are all available to everybody, and so they're all valuable and they're all important. But toward the Hathaway Success Curriculum, what we've developed, what we've tailored is working. Let's not tinker with it. The Hathaway Success Curriculum is something that has to be earned. It's not an entitlement. I'd urge you to vote against this bill and not dilute it anymore or at all.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. When I first came to the legislature, I spent the first 4 years in the Education Committee, and it was a passion of mine and a request to the Speaker that I be in there. And in that whole effort, the brightest star that came was the conception of what became the Hathaway Scholarship. That was when it was started in about 2004. It took some years to get legs and go on. My takeaway from what we did when we passed it the first time is that if you worked hard, took tough courses, kept your nose clean, you'd get a scholarship to the University of Wyoming or the community college of your choice, and that was an incentive. When that happened, those students took advantage of it. They're in the program. The feedback that comes from the community colleges and the university, it's a good program. I would suggest that we don't need to keep toying with this as we do, as noted by the good speaker, year after year. Let's leave it like it is. Don't try to fit every niche and try to make it an additional. And the word on the title of this one is modifying the Hathaway Scholarship. Let's stick with what we've got because it's working.
Anyone else for your first time? Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, part of what we do down here, no matter which way we go, there's always some unintended consequences. Do I think that the Hathaway Scholarship is incredible? Absolutely. Would I agree with the good chairman of appropriations that in some schools enrollment is up in some of those classes that help build brains and help kids succeed? Absolutely. But I have to look around this room and observe that there's only been one speaker at the microphone before me that represents very small school districts. The unintended consequence of Hathaway is that curriculum is being driven and offered by Hathaway. Almost every parent wants their child to go to college, and they want them to succeed and do a good job. I do. I want every child to have every advantage possible. But the reality is, and Mr. Speaker, you and I have had this conversation, that if you have a room full of lawyers that have their cars broken down, who will fix the car? And you told me sometimes it's easier to buy a new one than to get somebody to fix your car. If we continue to drive the curriculum offered by the Hathaway Scholarship in the smaller school districts, you lose two things. The first, and I think the most important one, is that you lose the opportunity for students to get engaged. Kids who are involved in sports are engaged. They're going to keep their grades up because they want to play sports. Students that are involved in music and want to participate in the extracurricular activities are engaged, and they're going to keep their grades up. They've got a reason to get up and go to school. They're engaged because they have something that clicks with them. They want to be there because they're doing something important to them. One of the things that the Hathaway has done is that in the smaller school districts, schools have had to choose between hiring more Spanish teachers, hiring more math teachers, hiring better qualified teachers, and downgrading their vocational education, scaling it back. We talk about that in school facilities. We talk about that in many different ways, scaling it back. So the first thing we lose is we lose the ability for kids to get engaged in something that they believe in or something that gives them a reason to get up and go to school. The second thing we lose is we lose the career and technical experimentation. They have an opportunity to go in and see, do I want to change oil in cars? Do I want to work on cars? And some of them say, absolutely never again. And some of them develop careers that help in our energy industry that stay with them lifelong. And having never gone to college, making $60 an hour as a welder. Because they had a good teacher in school, because they had the opportunity and equipment and space. So one of the unintended consequences of not tinkering, that was a double negative, one of the unintended consequences is that we limit the ability through financial, through space, and through time in children's education for them to experiment as to who they are, what they want, what career path they can travel. But most importantly, sometimes we lose kids because they're not engaged. I would urge you to support this bill.
Representative Patton.
Speaker. The maker of the amendment said he intended to withdraw his amendment, but I'm not confident that that's what he did before he sat down.
Chairman Patton, he gets to speak again. We all get two speeches. He still gets to speak. Anybody else for their first time? He will in a minute. Anybody else for their first time? First time. Second time. Representative Crum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, I certainly appreciate your comments that you made to the body today, but I think that it's important to emphasize once again, and I've said this time and time again, that this is not making the Hathaway Scholarship an entitlement at all. In fact, it is a balance between the honors and performance highest level and the provisional and opportunity below. The highest level of this, the Hathaway Scholarship stays the same. The requirements stay the same. And those the students that want to take the career tech and the fine and performing arts have to do it in addition to all those requirements. So the rigor stays there. Below in the opportunity and the provisional, that's where the opportunity to take those classes becomes a menu for those students. And so I think it's a unique combination of keeping high standards while at the same time providing opportunity to those students. So I would close with this. I think that this bill maintains the integrity of the Hathaway Scholarship. It maintains its rigor, but it provides that additional opportunity. And I would urge the body to defeat the amendment and vote for the bill. Thank you.
Anybody else for their second time prior to the sponsor? Second time prior to the sponsor? Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Appreciate all the good debate and comments. I would just say, though, that on page 4 of the bill, on line 9, on the provisional opportunity, and those are those folks, and we created this part of the scholarship specifically for those students who wanted to go to our community college and take advantage of our energy industry jobs. It changes the requirements for the provisional opportunity. Right now, those are basically high school graduation and proficiency in a foreign language. Now we're going to require one of these three areas, 2 years in one of these areas. So it changes it. It adds to it, make no mistake. And those are the kids we have specifically targeted. Western College has that great natural gas program. Where I come from, some great diesel mechanic programs. All of our community colleges have these unique and very important programs, and this bill will change those. So appreciate the debate, and I would withdraw the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
House Bill 177 having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
No.
Farlow.
Aye.
Berger. Blake.
Aye.
Blevins.
Aye.
Blickery.
Aye.
Brown.
No.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
No.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
No.
Connolly.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Filer.
Aye.
Freeman.
No.
Gay.
No.
Gingery.
No.
Goggles.
Aye.
Greer.
No.
Green.
Aye.
Halverson. Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
Aye.
Hutchings.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Kasparic.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Croker.
No.
Crone.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux.
No.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
No.
Northrup.
Aye.
Patton.
No.
Paxton.
Aye.
Petrov.
Aye.
Piperinen.
Aye.
Reeder.
Aye.
Semlick.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Walters.
No.
Watt.
No.
Wilson.
No.
Winters.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 37 aye, 23 no.
Brothers and sisters of the 67th, one of our representatives shared with me a series of the most vile, slanderous, vicious, invective-laden emails I've ever seen sent to an individual. And I'm considering a reaction and determining options with other members of leadership As we go into general file and debate contentious issues, let's make sure that we maintain our debate at the high level that we have and stand as a beacon of civility to the people in the state and the rest of the nation. Don't dignify those emails with an answer. Just delete them. Folks sitting in their underwear in the middle of the night in front of a computer are not political pundits. With that, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, we're going to rearrange the list after lunch. I'll give you the first 10 bills so that you can be prepared. House Bill 216, 103, 104, 105, 37, 212, and the new list will be out that will follow up with that. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move we recess and reconvene at 2 o'clock.
Are there any committee announcements? The majority party will caucus in B63. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Really, privilege of the floor. Just a reminder that the prayer breakfast is tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock at the Egg and I. Most people show up between 6:30 and a quarter to 7. Get our orders in, and we'll get you out in time to make your meetings tomorrow. Thank you for the privilege of the floor.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet 10 minutes upon adjournment today in room H17, where we will hear House Bill 102, Hospitalization of Mentally Ill Persons, House Bill 234, Home Energy Assistance Program.
Any other committee announcements? Chairman Gingery.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number one, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning, 8 a.m., to hear House Bill 227, Home Incarceration, House Bill 243, Felony Burglary, House Bill 231, Post-Dated Checks. Then at noon, we will take up Senate File 10, Supreme Court Decisions and Session Laws, Senate File 12, Child Support Payment Procedures, Senate File 15, Engrossed Inmate Transfers, and Senate File 14, Correctional Industries.
Vice Chairman Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Yes, ma'am.
Your minority caucus will be meeting upon noon recess in Herschler 1699. You're all invited. We'll be reviewing the goldenrod, so would you bring that with you? Thank you.
Madam Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee, number 7, corporations, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. We will continue House Bill 187, Campaign Finance, House Bill 206, Exemption Water Utilities, House Bill 219, Campaign Finance Reporting, House Bill 129, Voting Rights. We will then continue with a noon recess meeting with House Bill 181, House Bill, which is County Officers' Authority to Retain Outside Counsel, House Bill 218, Collection Costs for Debts Owed to the State, House Bill 246, Governmental Entities, Sale of Petroleum Products, and House Bill 259, State Elected Officials, Board Votes, and Chairmanships. Thank you.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 2 will meet Thursday, January 31st at noon recess, and if necessary, on adjournment on Thursday, January 31st for the following bills: Senate File 47, Engrossed, School Finance Amendments, House Bill 245, State Parks Peace Officer Retirement, House Bill 248, State Building Commission Staffing, House Bill 249, Budget Reduction Implementation, House Bill 250, Public Employees Retirement Plans, and House Bill 255, Year-Round School Calendar Incentive. And, Mr. Speaker, if I could, just a short privilege. On the folks, you have the first goldenrod that you've had in a week. I think it's in your tray, and I just wanted to draw your attention, Mr. Speaker, to that all-important line number 6. It has that 6 in parentheses beside it. And you can see now the goldenrod has changed. You have the governor's rec, and now you have the JAC recs. And last week, as I spoke on this topic, we talked about $28 million would be on the table for saving or spending, and that has dropped. And the main reasons are
In our round robin in JEC, our last actions added $10 million to local governments and $5 million to landfills, and that's why it drops so significantly. And, Mr. Speaker, I would just remind folks that line four, just up from that, two up from number six, that all-important line number six, are the current bills that have passed Committee of the Whole. It's up over $1 million now, and to remind Committee of the Whole that those bills are listed on page two. And you can see them listed by, in order of bill number. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You'll be in the good hands of the Speaker Pro Tem this afternoon as I broke a tooth, and instead of debating social issue bills with you, I'll be getting a root canal. You have heard the motion. All in favor of the House recessing until 2 o'clock, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House is in recess.